Kasia Bale is Professor of Gerontological Nursing at the University of Canberra. She's also one of the theme leaders and the core members of the Centre for Ageing Research and Translation, or CARRT as it's known, the acronym at UC. Yuma, and welcome to Afternoons, Professor Bale.
Yuma, Adrian, lovely to talk to you today.
Now, for anyone who hasn't experienced the frightening condition of delirium, particularly among loved ones, can you explain how to recognise it and what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So delirium is an acute brain failure, if you like. It can be caused by lots of different things. And so it looks different in everybody because it's very much dependent on how their brain's affected and I guess how that translates to their activities and actions. Often what people notice, first of all, is just some kind of change. Something's a bit off in their loved one. And carers and loved ones are the best people to recognise it because they know them best. Somebody's change in concentration or change in executive function and ability to make decisions looks different depending on how well you know them. Everybody's quite different in how we display our cognitive function. So it's the people who know them best who can see a change. There's two main kinds of delirium that we talk about, and that's hypoactive delirium and hyperactive delirium. And so the hyperactive delirium tends to get more attention because they are the people who are climbing out of bed or suddenly becoming kind of floridly delusional and perhaps running in circles literally, whereas the hypoactive delirium is more about becoming more sedate and more withdrawn and so can be much less noticeable, which is therefore then harder to pick up and harder to treat if we haven't seen that change.
Professor Bale, how common is delirium among people living with dementia and other cognitive declines? Is it a foregone conclusion that they're likely to experience it along that journey?
It's common in hospital. So in hospital for older people, so people over the age of 65 or 45 or Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, we'll see it in 30 to 50% of hospital admissions. So it is really common, really prevalent if you're in hospital for something else. It's much less common in the community, but it is also, you know, any of your risk factors go up where you've already got an impact on the brain. And so dementia obviously has a long-term impact on the brain. So they are more susceptible to, more vulnerable to changes, particularly if there's some other change happening, like a medication change or a side effect or an infection or something else that's going on in their body, their brain is more likely to be affected and experience that delirium. A quick little story that I remember of an older patient who came into the emergency department with delirium. He'd actually fallen off a ladder, which is not an uncommon experience, and so I'm not sure if the delirium was before or after, but when I asked him how he was feeling today, he said, like a box of fluffy chickens. And I'll never forget that as being a beautiful demonstration of a very, happy and positive, but fairly hyperactive delirium. So that's just one of the many examples that I've seen.
How common is delirium among younger Australians, people aged under 50?
Look, it's uncommon, but it occurs. And so, again, you're looking for something that's usually associated with some other complication. So I heard of a case recently of a 39-year-old who'd been exposed to extreme temperatures. He'd been off skiing and then also got sick. And so that combination of factors, when he was then doing some overseas travel and then perhaps, again, the overnight flights, the intensity of that travel experience, he experienced a really rapid and extreme delirium that was treated as a psychosis. And that was incredibly distressing for him. And his family was like a 3-month recovery period to really get over. So it can look quite different in that journey if you're not reversing it fast, if you're not treating that infection fast and completely, can be really substantial.
So it sounds a very serious health condition, but also costly to the economy in terms of costs in the hospital, Professor Bart.
Yeah, we're talking about $8 billion a year for the Australian economy in terms of hospital admissions that experience a delirium. Because of the complications that are associated with it, it tends to increase the length of stay. It also increases risks of complications of other kinds of things like pneumonia and urinary tract infections, or those associations, because once you've got a longer hospital stay, then you're also more susceptible to other complications after that. And length of stay is obviously a huge cost for the industry.
You've mentioned how well-placed carers of loved ones are to respond, identify and help manage this condition. And it's exciting to hear that there is some new work and some new opportunities to empower carers in ward settings here in Canberra. How has that come about?
Yeah, so we're super excited to announce that we've got NHMIC funding to be part of a multi-site trial with New South Wales and Queensland. And Christine Ager is leading that work. We're going to be supporting carers in a number of different hospital wards at Canberra Hospital to be better able to recognise and then communicate the changes that they might be seeing in their loved ones. So we'll be working with nurses on a number of different wards and then giving carers support to a website and a number of different platforms, because obviously websites don't suit everybody, but to really increase their knowledge and awareness of what delirium is, and their ability to then communicate with health professionals if they have concerns.
Carers were involved in piloting this research. What did we learn from their experiences at that time?
What they found was that carers, after they were exposed to this tool and this range of different kinds of resources, was that their knowledge about delirium increased, and that they felt more confident in being able to approach staff. They also said that they were happy, they felt it was part of their role as a carer or a loved one to be involved in the identification process, because obviously we don't want to overburden. Carers have already got enormous responsibilities. It's not about pushing back and giving them more responsibilities, but really about pairing, partnering with consumers and their carers to get better healthcare outcomes for everybody.
Is this unusual, this opportunity for carers and nurses to directly collaborate in this way for a condition like this in a hospital ward setting?
Look, great question. I'd love to say that it wasn't. I mean, obviously we work as nurses, I'm a nurse still, we work with patients and loved ones all the time. That is par for the course, that is normal practice. However, it is also really hard to do, and it's hard to do it well. And so bringing the right kinds of supports and also the whole kind of infrastructure and hierarchy to be supporting those interactions and really emphasizing and putting them on a pedestal to say this is the most important interaction that we can be having to make a difference to our patients. Doesn't always happen, and so that bolstering of funding to make it happen better and to be able to measure the outcomes so we can demonstrate whether this is the best way to implement an intervention like this is what we need to know scientifically whether this is the best approach and whether it makes a difference in delirium rates and, admissions to residential aged care and morbidity and mortality and things like that.
For 666 ABC Radio Canberra listeners who might want to head online right now and have a look at the online toolkit, the website and the digital aspect of this initiative, where can they go to read up more, Professor Bale?
Look, they can have a look. We've had a couple of little news releases. So if they Google Predict and Christina Agar, it should pop up. And certainly having a look at just to further educate themselves about delirium, being thinking about the 5 Ps, we call them, in terms of identifying what might be contributing factors to delirium. So that's pee, poo, pain, pills, and pus. There's lots of
Lovely.
information out there. Oh, look, you've got to get into the nitty-gritty when you're a nurse, right? We're talking about human bodily functions and how they affect the brain. But these are the things that will make a difference. And I've talked to lots of carers, and some of them are like, I'm not going to look at my husband's stools. And I'm like, that is absolutely fine. This is where you go to your health professional and say, I have these concerns. Do you think this could be a delirium? And they will respond to you.
I think we need to hear all of those factors in a little more detail. The poo and the pus, the
Are you sure?
whole
More
lot.
detail?
Yes, because I'm sure there'll be some listeners who want to know more right now about this so that they can be better prepared to care for their loved ones.
Yeah, look, it's so important. And when you've got changes in attention and awareness and your cognitive fluctuations, it can be really hard to kind of pin your finger on it. You just know that something's different. And so that's why having a look at all these other contributing factors, and it can even just be the environment that they're in or how much water that they've drunk lately. And sometimes you may never know what's contributed to that change, but we need more of those tools so that we can say, yes, there is an absolute definite change here, and we need to try and reduce the impact of that on the brain long term. The more that we can reverse it early, the more that we can put in ameliorating factors, which is often just supporting all of their other kind of physical and cognitive functions so that you're not worsening it. So you're not giving them antipsychotics to try and dampen down that agitation or trying to sedate them because they seem distressed. Often it's about treating pain. Pain is actually the most common contributing factor for a delirium, and we tend to undertreat it. So do go looking.
Professor Bale, tell me more about PREDICT. You love an acronym in the health services, don't you? Prevention and Early Delirium Identification Carer Toolkit. This is the toolkit that's going to be on offer in Canberra, in the wards with Canberra Health Services next year.
Yeah, look, that's right. I don't know if it's just an acronym thing for scientists or if it's also an Australianism. We can't cope with anything more than two syllables, right? So predict is about trying to pick up and predict potential consequences of that delirium. And so using that toolkit and the relationships and encouraging the relationships between nurses and carers and perhaps creating environments where it's easier to have those conversations. One of the other things that we'll be looking at is that kind of environmental access. Sometimes in a hospital, there's nowhere to maintain your usual kind of activity. So maybe you would usually go for a walk in the morning and perhaps you're unwell, so you're not going to go for a very long walk, but actually you can only even go in circles around the ward. There are no interesting points of interest. The new hospital has obviously got quite a few new spaces that we'll be able to maximise for that kind of activity and meaningful engagement and distraction so that people can feel themselves, because usually that's what we're seeing in a hospital is that disassociation from the person's identity, a completely different environment again, particularly for people with dementia, that they get really thrown by all those changes and they're not having any of the usual orientations that help them remember who they are and what they do today. And that helps to sort of further damage that impact of that injury upon the brain.
What kind of modelling or expectations have you got then for how this intervention, when it comes to the identification and the treatment of delirium involving carers and nurses, what that could mean in terms of savings to our health system more broadly and taxpayers more broadly?
Yeah, look, certainly early intervention is key, and that can really reduce that length of stay. We know that often in hospital we're waiting for test results, we're waiting for something else, we're waiting for another decision about another component. But if we're better able to recognise that actually this is the biggest injury that they're experiencing is the delirium, and that perhaps we could be managing this with hospital in the home if they went home earlier and then maintaining infection treatment while they're at home, or that there are other opportunities that by focusing on reducing the harm of delirium, if we're treating that as the highest risk of complications and further length of stay, then we can perhaps, halve some of those length of stays. We can perhaps find earlier intervention. And again, particularly the older people might be waiting in emergency departments. It's not currently seen as a triaging emergency. It doesn't seem life-threatening at that moment, but give it another 12 to 18 to 36 hours and the complications increase. And so that early intervention, perhaps we're needing a better kind of gerontological assessment in the emergency department and better streamline into a single next transfer. Sometimes older people experience multiple bed transfers in a hospitalisation because we're trying to make it convenient and streamlined for the hospital. It is a bit of a factory line, let's face it. But that environmental change can also then contribute to the delirium. So all of those points, by having a project like this, we're getting everybody involved, everybody's got shared ownership of it, to really try and reduce that impact and work out what are the ways that can make it more effective for the hospital as an organisation, as well as each of the individuals involved.
Professor Bale, is that ongoing funding that you've been able to secure for not just the ACT, but also Queensland and New South Wales to create this intervention in hospital ward settings here in Canberra and beyond?
No, this is intervention funding. It's a partnership program of research. So we're very delighted to be working with ACT Carers and also the Healthcare Consumers Association, who have also contributed substantially to the project, both financially and in kind. And the Canberra Hospital Emergency Department have also contributed, as well as the Division of Medicine and Nursing. And so all of those contributions make a big difference in terms of this implementation. But the intention is to work out, again, like I said, scientifically, we're doing a stepwise trial. We'll trial it using control measures for each of the populations before we implement it, so that we've got baseline measures and then we can see what the difference is at each of the sites. But it's to try and determine whether this is a viable intervention and a successful intervention about doing no harm and hopefully doing benefit. And then we'll be seeking, I guess, either additional funding for in terms of research funding for implementation, or again looking at that translation from a government, and state perspective.
Professor Bale, thank you so much for being with us on 666 ABC Radio Canberra to talk about this exciting new intervention for delirium in the wards, empowering carers and nurses to hopefully make a positive difference.
My absolute pleasure, and sorry that we had to get to the nitty-gritty of the bodily functions, but I know that you wanted to go there.
Oh,
It's important to make sure
enjoyed
we're
every
making a
minute.
difference.